2 years have passed since President Barack Obama called on agencies to reform their hiring processes. Nearly everyone seemed to agree that hiring took too long, it was too difficult for applicants to navigate the Byzantine federal system, and long essays wasted everyone's time. Now, the new goal was to reduce federal hiring to a more manageable 80 days so the best candidates didn't get away. So, how's it going now? Well, to find out, we've assembled an expert panel for you this morning.
Joining us in the studio are Angela Bailey, Deputy Associate Director for Employee Services at the Office of Personnel Management, Denise L. Carter, Deputy Assistant Secretary for Human Resources and Chief Human Capital Officer at Health and Human Services, and John Crum, Director of the Office of Policy and Evaluation at the Merit Systems Protection Board. And we thank you all for being here. Great to have you this morning. So
thank
I'd like
you.
To throw out the first question, and really, why don't we start with you, Ms. Bailey, since you're kind of the OPM lead on all of this. What are the big issues in recruitment and retention these days for the federal government?
I think some of the big issues that we're facing is all you have to do is kind of look at the press to see some of the big issues these days. And some of the things that quite frankly worry us quite a bit is what we kind of see is almost like a race to the bottom when it comes to the federal pay and benefits and things like that. And we worry terribly about the long-term effects that that's going to actually have on both recruitment. We're starting to see it. I think the Partnership for Public Service had actually put out some data not too long ago that showed that students were less likely to want to actually work for us anymore. And then our own retention issues when you feel this complete bashing, if you will, or you feel like, wow, the things are kind of rough. We do worry about the long-term effects on retention.
And Ms. Carter, you are actually in that business of recruiting and retaining people, and you've probably got a big staff at all the different pieces of HHS that do it. What are you seeing?
We're also seeing difficulties in competing with the medical community at large. Our business, we hire many healthcare and scientific, experts into our agency. So it's critical that, we're able to have pay that's commensurate with, what they're getting in the private sector and in their other professions. So, again, recruiting for that specific skill set is still a challenge for us at HHS.
And Mr. Crum, when things don't go well, they end up at the Merit Systems Protection Board. And what are the trends that you're seeing from your end of the world?
I think one of the things we're concerned about is that we've been actually in a good state for the last couple of years because of the recession. We've been very competitive as a government for hiring. I don't think that's likely to continue as the country recovers. I think that we're going to run into real competition for the top talent that we need. And the need for that talent is only going to increase for us as the retirement tsunami passes through, which it is right now hitting us. We're going to be turning over more people. And we, as Denise said, are looking for people in very scientific and demanding fields that it's going to be very tough, I think, competing in the future.
Now, we're talking about hiring, of course, today and retention, but you mentioned something I just want to follow up briefly. You said the retirement tsunami is really upon us. I mean, we've heard about this for the 20 years I've been covering government. It really is here?
The information we've seen suggests that it is. I believe, Angela would know better than I, but that OPM's retirement numbers were up 20% last year and expect to be up another 20% this year. The numbers are really going through the roof in terms of the retirements.
Ms. Bailey, do you have the figures at hand, or just generally, are you seeing this to be the case?
Yes, actually, we are seeing this to be the case where the numbers, as you said, are starting to increase. Our SES workforce, as we know, is somewhere around 60% are able to actually retire. And I think, quite frankly, the more the pay is frozen, the more that benefits and things are affected. I think those who have a lot of options, as John mentioned, especially the fact with the growing economy and all, it's one of the things that we're extremely concerned about. Basically, it's an institutional knowledge drain that I think scares us the most.
So in this landscape, there are clearly things that agencies can't really do anything about, some of the things that you just mentioned. But where does hiring reform fit into it? And when you think about the concept of hiring reform, it's two words that could kind of mean anything. So also tell me a little bit about what you understand hiring reform to be and how it fits into this landscape. And Angie, why don't we start with you?
Well, a hiring form, I think where it fits into this landscape is one of the really nice things about it is that no matter what, we are always going to be hiring. No matter what they do, what happens to the budget, no matter how many cuts we face or attrition or whatever, is going to actually lead us to need to hire. And especially in some of the areas like Denise mentioned, the scientific, the engineering, mostly in the STEM fields, the IT, those are areas where we're going to need to continue. So what you want to have is a really good foundation of a hiring form or a hiring process that makes sense to folks, that is streamlined, that's not cumbersome, that actually gets the kind of quality folks in. As Director Barry likes to say, it should be easy to apply but hard to get the job. And what he means by that is that the process itself should be extremely easy and user-friendly, but the actual assessments and things that we use to have a federal job, it should still mean something. You know, it shouldn't be that it's just like your choice of last resort. Instead, it should be your first choice of someplace that you want to work in. And in order to get in, you know that you're part of a cadre that it was really tough, meaning the assessments and things like that, to actually have a valuable federal job.
And Denise Carter, is that how you define it at HHS? And how do you see hiring reform and this notion of making it easy to apply, but still a difficult and challenging job? How does that fit into the landscape we've been talking about?
If you notice, there are five parts of the hiring reform program specifically geared at the applicants, trying to encourage them to come in. You know, get rid of the essays, let them submit resumes and cover letters, really marketing to them that it will be easy to get in. I kind of moving toward hiring reform part two, where want to make additional changes on the government side so that we're accurately telling them what we need for them to hit the ground running. If you notice, there are a number of announcements where we say, you know, 1 year experience at the GS-13 program level. That doesn't mean anything to an applicant. But if I tell them, you know, I need 5 to 10 years experience as a web developer, you need to know Java, those types of things, then we're getting the right candidates, and they're not frustrated because they're competing with 1,000 people with different skill sets, all not meeting the goal.
So it's a matter of kind of harmonizing with what the world at large speaks of when it talks about experience and not having this inside jargon so much that
yes.
We in the federal government all know, but nobody else does.
Exactly. That's on point. That's where we're going.
And Mr. Crum, weigh in on this whole issue of reform. What does it really mean?
Well, I think that what we've done so far is a good start, but is really just a start. It's really dealt with the issue of the complexity and the time it takes to hire. But there are a number of other significant issues which have yet to be dealt with, issues such as the ability of the government to recruit and market itself, things like the assessment tools we use to evaluate applicants, I think, could be better used. There's issues of capacity, I think, in our human resources staffs that run the hiring process, as well as the managers who actually end up making the selections and sort of working them together as a process, I think, can be improved. And finally, I think there also are real systemic issues in terms of the fragmentation of the overall hiring process, with everything being decentralized and delegated and agencies having different authorities to such an extent that in many cases, managers and even HR staffs don't know the full range of those authorities or how to apply them.
So you spoke about two things, what we've done, where we're going. Let's talk a little bit about what agencies have accomplished. And from your angle, Mr. Crum, what do you think are the most important things that have been achieved under this hiring reform initiative that began in 2010?
I think the first thing is agencies have at least begun to look at themselves in the process. When the Partnership for Public Service looked at hiring, they found that in many cases agencies were their worst enemies in terms of hiring. So the very first step of looking at themselves and what they've done is, in fact, I think, a very big positive.
So that sort of critical self-assessment had never really been done before?
I don't know if never is quite right, but I think that many people were operating from the status quo. And again, that's been a whole problem in the hiring, is that we've done things as they've evolved, as we've done them previously, and not necessarily evolved them towards improvement.
And Denise Carter, what was the big sort of sea change in the way that HHS looked at how it was doing things?
We were looking to significantly reduce our hiring timeframes. And I came in and said, okay, it looks like we're working from a pull model. We're waiting for a vacancy, and then the manager is working with HR. let's go and look at 4 years of hiring data, and we can look at the, you know, the out-year budget submissions, and we can put together a list of, you know, the top 60% of the jobs we're going to need for fiscal years 2011, 12, and 13. So then we're no longer waiting until we get a vacancy. We're putting those announcements out on a regular basis so certs are available to our managers. And then that allows us to go out to the community to recruit ahead of time, to tell the veterans, to tell the differently abled candidates, hey, this is what we're looking for. If you want a new career, come to HHS.
It's 9:16. And our guests today are Angela Bailey, Deputy Associate Director for Employee Services at OPM, Denise L. Carter, Deputy Assistant Secretary for Human Resources and the Chief Human Capital Officer at Health and Human Services, and John Crum, Director of the Office of Policy and Evaluation at the Merit Systems Protection Board. This is a Federal News Radio discussion on progress in hiring reform. We have lots more after this short break. I'm Tom Temin, along with Emily Kopp, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Best Buy, we have expanded our selection of HD Radio car stereo receivers. New HD Radio car stereos are in store and offer you the best in digital entertainment and information. More music from local HD2, HD3 radio stations, iPhone, iPod control, digital traffic, iTunes tagging, and more. Best Buy has the leading brands, Alpine, Pioneer, Kenwood, JVC, lots to choose from, with prices as low as $120. Here at Best Buy, we recommend HD Radio technology.
By combining HP 3PAR utility storage with HP ProLiant Gen 8 servers powered by the latest Intel Xeon processors, you can lower your total cost of ownership and improve project ROI. GovConnection, a federal elite HP partner, can show you how HP can power your data center into the future. Call GovConnection's experienced federal team, where service and commitment to the customer are priority one. Call 800-800-0019 today.
Are you ready to take a leadership role in your public service or nonprofit career? Become a leader at the forefront of modern government practices with a Master of Public Administration degree from Central Michigan University in Alexandria. This unique program is enriched with international content, a vital element in today's global economy. CMU's Master of Public Administration degree is NASPAA certified and the gold standard degree for public administrators.
I would recommend, if you work in local, state, or federal government and you're interested in learning about management, organizational leadership, this is definitely a good program. It's a very strong program.
Learn how you can prepare for senior leadership positions with Central Michigan University's adult-friendly Master of Public Administration degree taught right here in Alexandria. Classes will be held at CMU's Alexandria Center. Go to cmich.edu/metrodc. That's cmich.edu/metrodc for more information or call 877-679-1268. Central Michigan University in Alexandria. Quality degrees, convenient formats. Certified operate by Chev.
Bill Fox from LexisNexis Risk Solutions commented during the panel discussion titled The Cloud as a Shroud, Fraud in a Digital Age, brought to you by Booz Allen Hamilton.
If you take more data, you understand how to score it. For instance, you might have a clinical risk score on a provider that you're looking at. Do you need to know, is it a driver of fraud if a provider's had two bankruptcies in the last couple of years? If a provider is within a couple degrees of association to a known fraudster?
To hear this show in its entirety, go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword Booz Allen.
Information is flowing from more sources than ever before. Cloud-enabled enterprises can collect and analyze terabytes of data by leveraging the new technology. They can rapidly analyze an entire data set, developing deeper insights than what could be gained from looking at only a portion of the data, thus enabling better decisions made much faster. Booz Allen Hamilton believes secure, scalable, and automated cloud-based solutions can help derive actionable information faster. Count on Booz Allen to help you be ready for what's next. Learn more at boozallen.com/expert. Voices.
This afternoon between 3 and 7 on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, the Federal News Countdown with the three most important federal news stories of the week as selected by Alan Schwatkin of the Professional Services Council and Bill Bransford of Shaw, Bransford & Roth. The Army will look a lot different in a couple of years than it does today. Michael O'Hanlon of the Brookings Institution on what the Army will and should do. That and lots more on In Depth with Francis Rose this afternoon between 3 and 7 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
9:20, and welcome back to our Federal News Radio discussion on hiring reform in the federal government. I'm Emily Kopp, along with Tom Temin, and we're joined today by Angela Bailey, Associate Director for Employee Services and the Chief Human Capital Officer of the Office of Personnel Management, Denise Carter. She is Deputy Assistant Secretary for Human Resources and the Chief Human Capital Officer at the Health and Human Services Department. And John Crum, he's the Director of the Office of Policy and Evaluation at the Merit Systems Protection Board. And just before we went to that quick break, Denise Carter was talking about how HHS was being proactive and anticipating vacancies at the agency. And that was a way that you were getting on top of those hiring reform goals. So, Angela Bailey, I'd like to hear from you, both as the Chief Human Capital Officer at OPM, what your agency is doing, and then as the personnel agency, what you see other agencies across the government doing in terms of being proactive.
Right. Thank you. Within the Office of Personnel Management, some of the things that we're doing, along with, as Denise had mentioned, with the workforce planning, is that you have to know exactly where it is that you are today, what kind of skills do you need today, and then where are you going into the future. So, for example, with regard to the health care acts and bills that have been passed, that's something that is a new mission, if you will, for OPM. And so we have to look into the future as to what kind of skills are we going to need to be able to implement the health care, along with our retirement, for example, getting ahead of some of the things. We knew that was an area where we were going to need to hire some additional people. And then from a human resource standpoint, because like we like to say, we're kind of like the mothership, if you will, of personnel management across the federal government. So you've really got to have the skills on board that you need at a very high level when it comes to pay and leave, benefits, labor and employee relations, all those kinds of things. So you need a mix of skills and things that are available. And one of the best ways to do that is to really kind of look out into the future, see what you're going to need, and then position your agency to be able to attract that and actually hire those. Some of the things that we have seen the agencies doing, and they're doing a fantastic job, is number one is, I think, two things that hiring reform has really allowed us. One is that the manager's involvement. That's been super. And so by getting the managers involved, we actually now start to have a much more realistic job previews as to what's really going on versus, you know, just throwing out a JOA and, like we used to call it, post and pray. You know, that doesn't work. You got to actually get out there and you have to make sure that people completely understand what your positions are. And then from there, the agencies are also making really good use of the data. So you can tell historically where you've been, but you can also then, by looking at your EVS results, looking at the CHECO surveys, looking at the USA job surveys, looking at all this different data and pulling it all together. And then many agencies, including OPM, we've created what's called an HR dashboard. And so when you combine all of those things together and you start really getting to the root cause of certain things and where you have specific and really kind of drilling down on the issues, I think that that's where we see the agencies having quite a bit of success in being proactive.
So they're breaking down those barriers between people who, I guess, aren't really used to thinking of themselves as having human resources roles, but having to be hiring managers and making those decisions, and then the staff that is indeed the HR staff. Now, John Crum, at the Merit Systems Protection Board, what sort of challenges are you seeing agencies having when they're trying to be proactive on one hand and trying to speed up their process? Is anything falling through the cracks when they do that, though?
I'm not sure what's falling through the cracks, but I think that one problem is with the budget restrictions that agencies have. They're sometimes slow to make decisions about when to hire and whether to allow someone to make a hiring decision. And that presents problems in trying to plan out strategically what they're going to hire and what sort of position they need.
And I wanted to ask Ms. Carter at HHS, you had kind of a confluence of two things happen. One, there was the health care reform, which changed HHS, is still changing it. And then we had the hiring reform initiative. So how did that all impact and what did you do about it?
That's one of the reasons why there's no way that at HHS we can just wait until there's a vacancy to launch a recruitment strategy. We're really collaborating, you know, with our budget folks. You know, we've already taken a look at the 2013 budget submissions. I can see where the operating divisions are going with their programs, and we've already started building that recruitment strategy. You know, the key is to stay ahead of the recruitment need and to really get out there and talk to the schools, talk to industry about what we're looking for. So really the proactive recruitment and advertisement strategy is working for us.
And is there any way to measure that? Is there a metric that shows that you're being proactive?
In addition to, you know, seeing our time to hire go down, we're also looking at the number of selections we're making from certificates. Traditionally, you know, the federal government would advertise for a position. All that work goes into it, screening the applicants and everything, and they would make one selection. My goal is to get a certificate, and if we're looking for management analysts, I'd like to make 50 selections off of that certificate, again, to get a better return on investment.
Wow. So just for clarity, a certificate means that you have the authority to hire somebody?
It's a list of applicants that goes to the hiring manager. So traditionally, let's say you're advertising for a budget analyst. We'd go out and recruit for that. You'd get a certificate or list of applicants. You'd start interviewing, and you'd make a selection, and then we would close that certificate. We've changed that. Another office could need a budget analyst. We're going to take that same certificate and transfer it to that office and tell them, go ahead and make a second selection, because you can use a certificate for 90 days. Why not maximize the usage of it?
And just a quick follow-up, I imagine the skill sets needed expanded under the Affordable Health Care Act. And probably you're still uncovering what it is that needs to be done there.
Yes. As we move forward in trying to build the web exchanges, you know, not only looking for the right IT skill sets, but, you know, IT professionals who maybe have done some of this on the healthcare side before, you know, hiring of economists, you know, to help us work through those types of issues. Some of those are unique hires for us. So we have to expand our traditional recruitment strategy in order to get that talent.
And have you also had to sort of expand the list of skills that either human resources folks or hiring managers can bring to this process? And have you done any sort of training, Denise?
Yes, we are moving beyond the current transactional skill sets to really looking for HR consultants who can work with our hiring managers. And we have a robust training program for our hiring managers, and we're engaging them early and often.
And Angela Bailey, how about you at OPM?
One of the things we're quite proud of is our HR University that we created in concert with the Chico Council, and that has just really taken off. And one of the things is that the value of that is you do have a lot of experts within both OPM and within the agencies. And so as we develop our own courses in-house, we're able to actually put those up onto HR University. And we're reaching thousands of HR specialists at the same time. We've also created a corner for hiring managers. And we're often hearing about how hiring managers are now, they just want to be informed. And so some of our even bite-sized training to teach folks about what is reasonable accommodation. How do I hire a person with a disability? We're not trying to turn hiring managers into HR professionals, but we're trying to arm them with enough information that these things don't seem so daunting, you know, like all these different hiring authorities for veterans and things like that. When you boil it all down, if you don't make it so scary, you know, then actually we find that they're really inclined to want to use these different authorities.
Our guests today are Angela Bailey, Associate Director for Employee Services and the Chief Human Capital Officer at the Office of Personnel Management, Denise Carter, Deputy Assistant Secretary for Human Resources and the Chief Human Capital Officer at the Health and Human Services Department, and John Crum. He's Director of the Office of Policy and Evaluation at the Merit Systems Protection Board. Now, this is a Federal News Radio discussion on progress in hiring reform. We'll have lots more after this short break. I'm Emily Kopp, along with Tom Temin, and you're listening to Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Attention civilian employees of the intelligence community and the Departments of Defense and State. You could be eligible for affordable term life insurance from GEBA, the Government Employees Benefit Association, with coverage issued by Prudential. Learn more about this important benefit for government employees at GEBA.com/term life. That's GEBA.com/term life. Group term life coverage for GEBA is issued by the Prudential Insurance Company of America, 751 Broad Street, Newark, New Jersey, 07102. Contract Series 83500.
Hi, this is Wayne Zell, host of Blueprint for Wealth, every Saturday here on 1500 AM at 10 AM. Please join me this week for my special guest, Kim Natovitz of the Natovitz Group, where she'll talk about long-term care insurance planning. Blueprint for Wealth is brought to you by Odin Feldman and Pittleman, a full-service law firm located in Fairfax, serving the entire D.C. metro area. If you'd like to know more about our firm, visit us on the web at ofplaw.com.
This is Lisa Millman from AFMA. For military service members and veterans, there's no better place to go for your life insurance needs than AFMA. Our level term to age 50 policy is only $19 per month for $400,000 of coverage. And every member's policy comes with AFMA's unique survivor assistance services. For a free life insurance quote, call a membership coordinator at 1-877-398-2263 or visit AFMA.com. That's AAFMAA.com.
Get empowered with the IT skills you need to improve performance and help your agency achieve its goals. LearningTree International is the number one provider of IT classroom training to the federal government. They provide high-quality, instructor-led, hands-on training to government professionals and contractors at all levels. LearningTree offers over 200 courses covering today's most critical areas, including cloud computing, cybersecurity, mobile applications, project management, SharePoint, ITIL, and more. LearningTree is at the forefront of helping staff members meet critical mandates through their comprehensive FACT PPM curriculum designed to meet specific government requirements. They make it easy for you, too. Attend in person at one of their convenient Washington-area locations in Alexandria, Rockville, and Reston, or real-time via the web from anywhere. You can also bring LearningTree training to your team at your location. At LearningTree International, your agency's mission is their number one priority. Call 1-800-THE-TREE or enroll today at learningtree.com/gov.
Hey, everybody. It's David and Nikki Nellis for Foodie and the Beast, the D.C. area's one and only food and wine variety show with some big news.
On Sunday, April 29th, we will be live at the Birchmere. We'll be there for the Carpenters Cook-Off. It benefits the Carpenters Shelter, a fantastic charity, and many of the area's best chefs are going to be there cooking it up.
That's Foodie and the Beast live this Sunday from the Birchmere at 11 on 1500 AM.
Nine 9:31, and welcome back to the Federal News Radio discussion on hiring reform in the federal government here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Tom Temin, along with Emily Kopp. Our guests this morning are John Crum, Director of the Office of Policy and Evaluation at the Merit Systems Protection Board, Denise L. Carter, Deputy Assistant Secretary for Human Resources and the Chief Human Capital Officer at Health and Human Services, and Angela Bailey, Associate Director for Employee Services and the Chief Human Capital Officer at the Office of Personnel Management.
Let's talk a little bit about this executive memo that President Obama issued that started this whole hiring reform catalyst. How important was it in getting agencies to think differently about the way that they do this?
Well, anytime a president issues an executive order, people listen. Hiring reform had been discussed really for a number of years. We've been working on reports for 10 years. The Chico Council has been working on this issue for a very long time. OPM has been concerned about it for a very long time. The very fact that the president came out and issued an executive order to directing agencies to do these things, to shorten the process, to involve managers, to reduce the burden on applicants and the write-ups they provide, to allow for resumes, all of these things really were put into effect, whereas previously they had just really been discussed.
And we should say also, in addition to that, that there's a website, performance.gov, where actually you can go and you can see exactly how agencies are doing now. And I'm guessing that that wasn't as transparent to everybody before this executive order. Right.
That is true. And it does help for people to be able to see how things are going and, in a sense, be held accountable.
And maybe there's a little bit of healthy competition between agencies. Denise Carter, the Department of Health and Human Services, now I'm just looking at what's on performance.gov, and I know it's a bit dated, but in fact, it says that in fiscal year 2010, you did meet this goal of just taking 80 days to hire. And I don't remember the statistics, but I looked before, and it was close to double that before?
Yes, we were at an average of 159 days before we went to our proactive recruitment strategy.
So that's quite an accomplishment. And your scores in terms of applicant satisfaction, just reading on here, it's 7.7 out of 10, pretty good. Manager satisfaction, just a little bit less. But then it also shows that employees that are veterans, 6.4%, and new hires that are veterans about 6%. So I know those are also important things that, the president yes. and government-wide people are paying attention to. When you look at all these metrics, what are the most important ones that you follow?
Initially, and still today, the time to hire metric is important. However, for me, manager satisfaction, that they're getting the right candidate for the right position at the right time. That's critical for us. We also want to significantly improve our diversity goals. That's important. So that's one of the reasons we're meeting with the veteran service organizations, telling them about our hiring requirements, not only for 2012, but what we want to do in 2013, so that they can get the veterans ready to start competing for our positions.
And I was just going to ask, too, you mentioned the recruiting proactivity that caused these, this metric to drop to 80 days, but didn't something have to happen inside once you got the people in? Didn't the internal processes and what the managers did have to change also?
Yes. Our managers had to significantly reduce their interview and selection time. So even though a certificate of applicants is good for 90 days, we would tell our managers, you have 30 days to turn this around, and they would come to HR for an extension. That significantly dropped the number of days.
That's like telling your kids the curfew is 11 when you hope they're home at 12.
There we go. Also, it was very helpful to be able to tell our managers when they could anticipate getting the certificate of applicants so they could schedule time for the interviews ahead of time. So you're right, a lot of internal changes as well as external.
So when you're looking at that metric that you said was the most important, manager satisfaction, what sort of feedback are you getting?
There's still some concern about the quality of applicants coming in. So one of the things we're taking a look at is strengthening our minimum qualification statements. It's what we're publishing to the public about what we're looking for. Again, instead of saying those general statements about I want someone with 1 year of experience at the GS-13 level, really honing in on the skill sets that we need so only those applicants really, compete.
I talked with somebody, in a high-ranking human resources official at another agency, and she was just saying that she scans agency classified ads to find out which are the agencies that offer more creative descriptions, and those are the ones that she considers the top competitors for certain positions. Anyways, an anecdote. And Angela Bailey at the Office of Personnel Management, I note, according again to these same metrics, that, well, you still have a ways to go. The number of days to hire in fiscal 2010 it lists at 103. Have you been able to drop that since then?
Yes, we have made some progress in that, where I think we're down into probably around 100 right now with our days to it takes for us to fill a position. And, and we do a deep dive on that to figure out why, because you take that whole entire process. There's about 14 steps in the process, and there's a couple different areas. One is from the time, because remember, the 80 days is from the time the manager needs the job to the time the person's actually in the seat. And so what we've found is that there's two areas that still seem to be a bit of an Achilles heel. One is the hiring managers holding on to those certificates and not making the selections. And the second one is the time it takes for the person, like the EOD, the date for them to actually come on board. Because you have to build in times for, there's a 30 days usually if you're reassigning someone or if they're coming from another job. Most people want at least a month before they come on board. So those are two areas that we're really concentrating on and spending quite a bit of time.
It's 9:38, still to come on Federal News Radio. Our guests today, I should say, are Angela Bailey, Associate Director for Employee Services and the Chief Human Capital Officer at the Office of Personnel Management. Denise L. Carter, Deputy Assistant Secretary for Human Resources and Chief Human Capital Officer at Health and Human Services. And John Crum, Director of the Office of Policy and Evaluation at the Merit Systems Protection Board. This is the Federal News Radio discussion on progress in hiring reform. Lots more after the short break. I'm Tom Temin, along with Emily Kopp. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Pentagon and Beyond is brought to you by EADS North America.
Another green on blue incident in Afghanistan. A man wearing an Afghan army uniform fatally shot an American service member in southern Afghanistan yesterday. This is the latest in a string of attacks against Americans and other forces in Afghanistan by their partners or insurgents in disguise. Since the beginning of this year, there have been at least 16 attacks against Americans and other foreign troops by Afghan security forces or militants dressed as Afghan troops. I'm J.J. Green.
911, what's your emergency?
Every day, EADS North America supports homeland security and defense missions here at home and around the globe. Whether it's responding to emergencies or disasters, providing military helicopters, or systems that patrol and secure our borders and coastlines, EADS North America delivers on our promises every day. EADS North America, commitment defines us.
The $800,000 spending spree by GSA may seem like a lot of wasted money, but some experts say it's small potatoes when it comes to federal scandals. In our exclusive report, GSA Scandal in Perspective, Federal News Radio examines some of the biggest government embarrassments in recent history, including the $20 billion Air Force tanker scandal and as much as $60 billion in wasted money in Iraq and Afghanistan. Read our full report at federalnewsradio.com. Search scandals.
Listen each week for Tech Tuesday on Federal News Radio. Every Tuesday, we zero in on how technology inspires innovation. Tuesday mornings at 11, it's Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy, the latest on products that help bring policy to life. Then Tuesday afternoons at 12:30, join Federal News Radio's Jason Miller for Ask the CIO. Hear from the top of the food chain on how your agency is using technology today. Tech Tuesday, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
9:40, welcome back to our Federal News Radio discussion on hiring reform in the federal government. I'm Emily Kopp along with Tom Temin, and today we're joined by Angela Bailey, Associate Director for Employee Services and Chief Human Capital Officer at the Office of Personnel Management. Also, Denise Carter, she's Deputy Assistant Secretary for Human Resources and Chief Human Capital Officer at Health and Human Services. And John Crum, he's Director of the Office of Policy and Evaluation at the Merit Systems Protection Board.
And in this segment, we wanted to talk about diversity because there's a new executive order on increasing diversity among federal agencies. And I wanted to find out how that initiative has kind of mixed or coincided with the hiring reform. And why don't we start with you, Ms. Bailey, from OPM?
I think it's a wonderful combination. One of the things that we're really thrilled about is that we're really moving beyond this thing just R&O, where you just think of race and national origin and, you know, gender and things like that. And we're actually moving into diversity of thought, thinking about things like socioeconomic background and just a whole variety of things. And the other thing that I really like about our new with the president's executive order on diversity is the second part, which is inclusion. And so while we may spend quite a bit of time hiring folks to come in into the federal government, it's just as important that we spend just as much time making sure that we retain them and that they feel included and that they're a part of the community versus, you know, as I've heard said before, we don't want diversity and inclusion is not about Noah's Ark. It's not let me have two of this and two of that and call it a day and walk away. And so, you know, I think that the attention that's being paid, we've created a diversity and inclusion council, I'm sure, at most of the agencies. I'm actually the co-chair along with Liz Montoya, our chief of staff at our agency. So there's quite a bit of heightened attention to this. And I have to tell you, not one single person, hiring manager, HR specialist, I have never heard anyone say that this is going to have an adverse impact on their time to hire or anything else. Instead, I think everyone sees it as a richness in which we can, look to all segments of society, which, by the way, is part of the law, you know, is that we will actually be a federal government that's made up of all segments of society. And so I think it's a good thing.
Now, the thing about RNO is it is easy to count because you can see it. The diversity of thought, idea, and background, Ms. Carter, how do you get at that in the hiring process so that you know that you are getting a wide range of thinking and background that can't be discerned easily?
One of the non-competitive appointment authorities that I love is the Schedule A hiring for our disabled, or I prefer to say differently abled candidates. It allows us to go out there and bring in the differently abled organizations to brief them on our recruitment strategies and what we're looking for. And then they bring candidates to us that we can non-competitively select. So as we see that we have areas where we have a fit, we can reach out to those managers, pair them up with those groups, and they can make selections without an announcement. It's, you know, a wonderful program. And it helps us with the diversity numbers because when we have a diverse workforce, we get better decisions. We get better products. So I see the two programs going hand in hand.
But for those, that idea of diversity of background and thought, which is, again, harder to discern, but what you also need, along with the disability numbers and the RNO and so forth, how do you find that out about people besides just plain old job skills?
See, and that's difficult to capture in metrics. Yeah. You just have to expand your recruitment strategy and Angela, you may want to add on to this one, you know, to capture those people.
I think one of the things that we've found that's been real successful is it's during the interview process. So a lot of times what we've started to do with some of our questions is ask questions that don't have a right or wrong answer. Like, what do you think is the difference between, or what do you think is more important, flexibility or resilience? And so you're really just kind of getting at what are their thoughts, you know, kind of getting to the soul of the person versus just the skills. And that's where I think the evolution of hiring reform and assessments and things are going, is like just moving beyond this. Do you have the education? Do you have the skills? No, what does the whole person look like? One of the other things we've found that's really important is the journey. And so some of these folks that are coming in, no, they haven't gone to the top-notch schools and they don't have the 4.0. But, you know, there's nothing wrong with someone who's worked their way through college, their whole way through college. Yeah, they might have a 2.5, but they've held two jobs. They have a little kid. And so guess what that tells us? They are flexible. And they can juggle multiple tasks and do all kinds of things at one time. So that's how we're kind of getting at the whole person, is by really asking some of those thought-provoking questions during the interview.
And at the Merit Systems Protection Board, has this had an impact in what you're seeing, Mr. Cronin?
I think it will. I think one of the issues that we're concerned about in terms of diversity is that agencies sometimes doing a good job and sometimes not good job of proactively reaching out and developing the recruitment sources. And some agencies have become too narrow, for instance, and you only go into certain schools or certain populations. And we'll need to expand out broader than that if they're really going to reach this diversity.
Yeah, that's right. So it's really a part of not just the chief human capital officer, but those hiring managers that know the sources for the profession that they're in. Is that?
That's correct.
That's a good way to put it.
Yes.
And Angela Bailey, what's going on in terms of that at OPM?
One of the things that I John actually just reminded me of is we have USA Jobs Recruit that we actually created. It's free to all of the agencies to use. We partnered with the Department of Education. We have every single college and university, whether accredited or non-accredited, they can actually sort by the major, they can sort by the region, they can sort by historically Black universities or Latino-serving institutes. So what it does is it takes a hiring manager, and instead of just thinking about their alma mater, they can now think beyond that, and they can actually go to and see some of these schools, because they may not have had any idea that, you know, Shippensburg State University sitting up in Shippensburg, Pennsylvania, wow, they're putting out cybersecurity. And, you know, so those are the kinds of things to help the managers actually start to see the different kinds of programs.
It's 9:47. And our guests today are Angela Bailey, Associate Director for Employee Services and Chief Human Capital Officer at the Office of Personnel Management, Denise Carter, Deputy Assistant Secretary for Human Resources and Chief Human Capital Officer at Health and Human Services, and John Crum, Director of the Office of Policy and Evaluation at the Merit Systems Protection Board. This is a Federal News Radio discussion on progress in hiring reform. We'll have lots more after this short break. I'm Emily Kopp, along with Tom Temin, and you're listening to Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Military families make great sacrifices so that we can be safe, secure, and free. That's why we at United Health Military and Veteran Services are so honored to have been selected to serve families in the TRICARE West region starting in April 2013. United Healthcare serves over 78 million Americans nationwide. We have the experience and expertise to make healthcare better for our servicemen and women and their families. United Healthcare's expansive network provides access to hundreds of thousands of physicians and specialists. We focus on making it possible for healthcare teams to work together and share important information about your care. And at United Healthcare, we use innovative technologies to make sure you get the right care from the right doctor for your needs. Military families help keep us safe. So at United Healthcare, helping military families isn't just a job, it's an honor. To learn more, visit UnitedHealthMilitary.com.
Adobe Acrobat Pro is actually used very commonly for PDF archiving. If you've got a lot of files of different formats and different types, if you just save these files in all these different formats, then
20 years later, somebody wants to look at the file, they'd actually have to have the program that could open up that file. So for digital archiving, you'd rather have a standardized file format.
Stratford University's Tech Talk Radio, Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on 1500 AM.
Governments at all levels are operating in an era of fiscal austerity. Though revenues may be falling, the demand for critical services continues. Join host Michael Keegan as he welcomes Seth Diamond, Commissioner of the New York City Department of Homeless Services, as they discuss New York City's response to the challenge of homelessness. That's next week on the Business of Government Hour.
Hi, welcome to Best Buy. May I help you?
Yeah, my car's entertainment system just isn't cutting it.
Easy answer. Get an HD radio receiver, 100% free digital sound, digital traffic, and great music choices from your local HD2, HD3 radio stations.
Well, what brands do you have?
Best Buy has new expanded HD radio inventory. Alpine, Kenwood, Pioneer, JVC, with prices as low as $120.
Wow, an HD radio digital entertainment center? Show me the way. HD radio, more value.
The Washington Business Journal is seeking nominations for its sixth annual CFO of the Year Awards, recognizing CFOs and other financial executives in the Washington area for their outstanding performance as corporate financial stewards. Are you or someone you know a CFO star? Nominate them online at WashingtonBusinessJournal.com/nomination. Deadline is fast approaching. Save the date for the award ceremony, Thursday, July 19th at the Omni Shoreham Hotel.
9:51, and welcome back to our Federal News Radio discussion on hiring reform in the federal government. I'm Tom Temin, along with Emily Kopp. Our guests today are John Crum, Director of the Office of Policy and Evaluation at the Merit Systems Protection Board, Denise L. Carter, Deputy Assistant Secretary for Human Resources and Chief Human Capital Officer at Health and Human Services, and Angela Bailey, Associate Director for Employee Services and the Chief Human Capital Officer at the Office of Personnel Management.
And John Crum, as agencies build upon success in meeting or at least becoming a lot closer to those hiring reform goals and they enter the second stage, what do you see as the most pressing challenges that they're going to have to deal with?
Well, the first one is marketing themselves and reaching that population they need to. Our research has found that when we ask people, well, how did you apply for a job? How did you find out about them? And most often people find out about federal jobs by knowing someone who has one or by being a family member of someone who has one. That sort of, I don't think makes it in terms of being able to reach out to the population that we want to reach out to. And what we found is that different agencies have and sometimes devoted resources to reaching out, but many have not. Many rely simply on their vacancy announcements. And not really try to make an don't really make an effort to reach out to other populations to sort of broaden the pool of people they bring in.
And what's the trend? I can imagine with the budget that perhaps we're seeing more and more relying on just putting a vacancy announcement out. Is that what you're seeing at all?
Well, actually, that process has been going on for 20 years, ever since we downsized in personnel back in the 90s, really a lot of those resources that were devoted to things like recruiting went away, and they've never come back in many cases.
And you've also been, or you mentioned earlier that another challenge coming up is in addition to reaching out to a wide pool of candidates, assessing them. You mentioned assessment. Can you go a little bit into that?
Sure. What our research suggests is that, again, many organizations and agencies are using assessment tools that are easy and cheap, not necessarily the ones that identify the best candidates. So I think this sometimes reflects the what people have been trained to do, and they don't understand that there are other alternatives available. For instance, using a structured interview versus a non-structured interview makes a very big difference in terms of the quality of selections. Another simple thing that people don't use very often, but really we view as part of the assessment process, is use of the probationary period. This gives a chance for managers to correct mistakes that they've made in the selection process. But we find that this is rarely used. And when we ask managers about that, a significant number of them tell us, well, while we didn't get rid of the person on the probationary period, many times we wouldn't have selected them if we had to do over. That to me suggests that they've have made a big mistake.
Angela Bailey, can you speak to that question of, after all is said and done, whether or not actually the candidates that are the best candidates for the job are the ones that are being hired?
Yes, I mean, I think often if you were to ask a manager whenever they first make that selection, which, you know, it kind of, I always find humorous. A lot of times the survey questions will be, as soon as you make a selection, we ask the hiring manager, how satisfied were you with that selection? Of course they're going to say yes. They just selected the person. So one of the things that we're doing to get at that is, as part of the Chico survey, is to go out 6 months later and ask them, now how satisfied are you with that individual? And then right before the year's up, so to get to John's point, make use of the probationary period. It is a wonderful part of the assessment, and it really, sometimes you just don't know what you don't know until the person is on the job. People can interview extremely well. They can have some of the best reference checks in the world, but you get them on the job and they just don't play well with others, or, you know, or they just really don't have the skills that their resume perhaps said that they did. So I absolutely agree that the probationary period is probably the best assessment tool that we have.
And Denise Carter at HHS, just in the minute or so we have left, what is the next frontier for you, an agency that has already made substantial progress in hiring reform?
Training our HR specialists, so we move from a transactional skill set to an HR consultant skill set. We want to finish the implementation of an end-to-end HR IT enterprise structure, which will also support hiring, retention, and development, and we'll continue training our managers and expanding our recruitment efforts.
So from a year ago till now, you've made progress. What would you like to be able to say a year from now about hiring and retaining at HHS?
That our retention levels are up, that the employees perceive that they are working in a positive environment, and the managers are getting the applicants that they need to support their mission.
Well, that brings our discussion to a close. We'd like to thank our guests, Denise L. Carter, Deputy Assistant Secretary for Human Resources and the Chief Human Capital Officer at Health and Human Services, and John Crum, Director of the Office of Policy and Evaluation at the Merit Systems Protection Board, and Angela Bailey, Associate Director for Employee Services and Chief Human Capital Officer at the Office of Personnel Management. Thank you all for being with us. It's 9:56.
You've been listening to a Federal News Radio discussion, and you can find extensive coverage of federal hiring, pay, and benefits issues at federalnewsradio.com. And that's also where we're going to post this entire discussion later this morning. federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive. I'm Emily Kopp.
And I'm Tom Temin. Up next, Inside Government, brought to you by the American Federation of Government Employees. They'll be talking with the Economic Policy Institute about the outlook for Social Security's trust fund. And be sure to join us Monday morning, starting at 6 for the Federal Drive, with Tom Temin and Emily Kopp right here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. We are your source for federal news now.